The Guardian.
Football Weekly with James Richardson.
Football Weekly Easter Special. Premier League. Man United has nailed on for a title as Kate Middleton. Arsenal has nailed on for a booby prize as Kate Price. We catch up with the latest news from England's top division at both ends, then turn our big pod eyes on Europe. Germany, Schalke prepared to host Man United in the stadium where Wayne's already lost one cup. Spain, Barca and Real are still at it. Italy, where the pod says goodbye and good riddance to Barry and finds it strangely satisfying. And we catch up on the Pose, Old Firm game and the Championship 2 in today's Football Weekly. Right, off we go then with today the vocal talents of Barry Glendinning.
Hello.
John Ashdown.
Hi.
Hi, John Ashdown. And Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hi, everybody. I should just mention, first of all, we were making light on, you know, Katie Price and that in the intro, and producer Ben's just piped up and said she was involved in a serious car crash over the weekend.
Well, the airbag saved her, so.
Okay. Oh, Raphael Honigstein. Did somebody tweet that, or is that fresh from the brain of the honey stone?
Fresh from my rotten brain.
All right, then. Well, get well soon, Katie. Anyway, hey, title race. That's it, then.
Yeah, we're done. Goodbye.
That's it. Okay, United win with another late goal from Chicharito Hernandez. That's 13 of them so far, stats suggest. Amazing.
It's amazing, because when I saw him at the World Cup, I thought, yeah, okay, decent player, but is he the sort of player that's really going to help United in the Premier League or in the Champions League? I really wasn't sure, and he's proved me wrong, and he's been a vital part of their success this year.
Yeah, certainly has. Chelsea, of course, could still take it. The gap, fact fans, is 6 points, and, of course, United have Arsenal next, and then they host Chelsea, who could still take it, couldn't they? Especially now Torres has broken his duck and got the monkey off his back and generally been cruel to farmyard animals. They're a renewed force, aren't they?
What kind of farmyard have you been on where there's monkeys?
A monkey farm.
Right, okay.
I was really surprised that I didn't...
Or perhaps, sorry, a pharmaceutical factory.
Yeah, yeah. Although they're not farms, generally.
Yeah. Anyway. Before the animal rights people get on our back... But it remains to be seen whether the floodgates opened for Fernando or it was just a fluke. I mean, he took it well. It was a good goal in difficult circumstances. The ball got trapped in the wet ground. It was torrential rain that afternoon. Very scary thunderclap around Brixton Way, actually.
Yeah. Well, all over London.
Hiding behind a sofa.
Well, given some of the reactions over the weekend, you'd expect that Torres wouldn't be able to sit down now for the rest of the season without pooing a goal. But it wasn't just the fact that he wasn't scoring. He wasn't playing particularly well either. And I don't know if one goal necessarily changes that. So it does remain to be seen whether, you know, how it'll go for the remainder of the season. But yeah, United should have it wrapped up.
Might actually be contraproductive, because Ancelotti seemed to have made a decision that he's going to leave him on the bench with Drogba up front. Works much better, and it did. There might be actually be a case for starting Torres again, which would backfire probably.
All right. In the meantime, what we do know for certain is that Arsenal are not going to be anything to do with any Premiership title parties after that defeat, which ended their long unbeaten run. Statistics abound about how awful they've been playing since the Carling Cup defeat. They've had one win in 7 matches. What else? They've won just 2 of 10 games in all competitions, and those were against Leighton Orient and Blackpool. And 54% of the goals conceded by Arsenal in the Premier League this season have come from set pieces, higher than any other side. A stat against that, with Wenger increasingly being pilloried as this kind of comic French buffoon. Before Wenger, Arsenal finished top 4 in 23 out of 92 football seasons. Under him, it's 14 out of 14. So he must be doing something right. Or he was doing something right.
Well, I don't think anyone's saying he's a bad manager, but he has sort of shouldered the blame for Arsenal's shortcomings this season. And, you know, ultimately, as manager, the buck has to stop with him. But I think a lot of the criticism deserves to be sort of foisted onto the shoulders of his players, who've shown very little backbone, the constant defensive blunders. Nobody seems prepared to grab games by the scruff of the neck and drive them on to win games they look like dropping points in, the way Manchester United did against Everton and are so famous for doing. winning games without necessarily playing well. I mean, there was one spell against Bolton yesterday, I think it was a 10-minute spell where Arsenal had 75% of the possession but didn't trouble Jussi Jaskalainen in the Bolton goal once. There are ongoing problems with trying to Arsenal the ball into the net without taking shots. You know? Although the worst example of that yesterday was from a Bolton player when Lee tried to flick a ball back heeled across the face of goal when he had a clear shot.
Bolton, yeah, let's give them some love. That Daniel Sturridge fellow.
Oh, he was outstanding yesterday and a worthy recipient of the Man of the Match award. He scored a goal. He conned the ref into giving him a penalty, which Bolton didn't deserve and went on to miss. It was a shocking
bloody
effort by my close personal friend, the England international and Bolton skipper, Kevin Davis. And, they deserve a lot of credit, but they were outplayed for vast periods of the game and Arsenal should have won quite easily. But again, didn't. And the question is, why didn't they? Why can't they win these games?
I love Wenger's comment, Barb's comment about Bolton playing their cup semi-final 1 week late. Sort of the inference was that why did they try so hard against us? They got nothing to play for, effectively. You know, how dare they? But I'm not sure that I go along with sort of the psychology route into looking at Arsenal's problems. I think there might just be a case for saying that the players that he buys are just not very good, and with the biggest backbone in the world, they'd still wouldn't be finishing much higher. They're sort of playing at the level that they can play at.
Well, if they'd spent 10 million on Koscielny last summer, you know, Wenger's been criticised a lot for not spending money, but when he does spend it on players like that, it's not really paid off. I mean, look at the other players that have been bought over the last few years, like Vidic was 7 million, Kompany 6 million. Jagielka, 4 million to Everton. Cahill, when he went to Bolton, was 5 million. All less than he paid for Koscielny, and all better players. Yeah,
basically, everything's gone wrong at that club since David Dean left. You could make a fair argument for that.
Yeah, I mean, Marouane Chamakh was the centre-forward that everybody was crying out for last season. We said, why can't they buy a centre-forward who's going to give him some power in the air, etc. He's bought them. He was half decent in the first half of the season, fallen away completely. And now it's about, why can't they buy a warrior figure? Why can't they buy an English defender? It's just, I think, the quality of his signings have just not been good enough.
It's noticeable, actually, as well, that although you sort of the perception is that the draws with Blackburn and Wigan and your West Broms, not so much Sunderland, because the record against teams in the bottom half is on a par with Man United. It's their record against teams in the top half, which is very average, sort of level with West Brom.
Right, OK. Did you know that Arsenal have dropped fewer points from winning positions this season than Man United have?
No.
Interesting, that, isn't it?
I kind of feel sorry for Wenger, though, because he looks increasingly old and frail and fed up. And, I mean, the
water bottle routine as well, it's looking a little bit desperate now, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm kind of worried about him a bit. I know he had personal difficulties during the season, which were well documented in the tabloids, and I wonder, they were kind of largely swept under the carpet and he wasn't prepared to speak about them, as he's perfectly entitled to not speak about them. But I wonder if maybe that distracted him and took his eye off the ball. It's difficult to imagine how it wouldn't.
No. Do you think, speaking of off-field business, the fact that Fergie hasn't been employing his mind games nearly as much this season, if at all. Is that because he's basically laughing at how weak the opposition are? Benitez has been chased out of town, Mourinho's gone, he doesn't have to bother anymore.
I've always thought those nonsense about mind games is just media-generated rubbish, to be honest. He makes some comment and it's interpreted as, you know, he's some evil genius playing with people's heads. But no, I don't buy that.
Greatest trick the devil ever pulled out. Anyway, it all leaves Man United free to worry about Schalke and worry. They can choose. And worry, Raphael, they should.
It was a woeful Inter that they beat, and perhaps we shouldn't read too much into it. Schalke will pose them one or two problems. They're good at home. The support at home is fantastic. The
100% at home in Europe.
Yeah, the longer it'll stay 0-0 in the first leg, I would expect that the more comfortable they will feel, and perhaps there will be a little bit more pressure on United, who would be expected to go through, whereas Schalke are just sort of playing really for the fun of it, more or less. But of the two legs, with the second leg at Old Trafford, I'm just not sure there's enough there for Schalke to do it. It'd be great if they could, from a German perspective, but I just don't think.
Also for the club, it's going to be massive, no?
No, absolutely. I mean, they've never been in a semi-final before at this level. They've never won, well, they haven't won the German title in 52 years. So getting to the Champions League semi-final itself is a tremendous achievement.
I was in Lisbon just before Christmas when Schalke played Benfica, and it was a dead rubber. The last group game, they'd already qualified. But the Schalke fans turned out in massive numbers, took over the Bairro Alto, made it a really fun place to be for the sort of the weekend. We're deafening in an empty stadium because nobody from Benfica sort of turned up.
How do you know it wasn't you that was making it such a fun place?
Well, everywhere I go is a fun place to be, Barry, you know that. But I was just wondering, are all German football fans like that, or is it particularly a Schalke thing?
It's a bit of a Schalke thing. They've even sold out Intertoto Cup games and biathlon events at this stadium because the people are so fanatic to turn up to whatever is happening there that's only remotely connected to Schalke 04. And that's why even, you know, for them getting into Europa League, which they will probably manage by winning the German Cup, is such a massive thing because they can sell out every single game at their stadium, which does hold 60-odd thousand.
Mm. It is a stadium with unhappy memories for one or two members of United's party, Rio Ferdinand, Wayne Rooney, Portugal quarter-final in the 2006 World Cup.
Did Rio play? I'm not sure.
I don't know. He was in the squad, though, wasn't he?
Wasn't he? Injured.
Wasn't he there? Wayne Rooney, then. He was there. He was all two there, briefly.
Did you know, actually, Manuel Neuer was...
Oh,
Neuer.
Neuer, sorry, was a ball boy in that stadium the last time the Champions League final was played there at Porto.
I read that too.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I bet you I can tell you something you didn't read, that I watched every game.
The kind of websites you go to, I imagine you can.
Yeah, there's not much reading. But I watched every game played by Schalke and Man United in the Champions League just in the course of my research for this podcast.
All right.
And Schalke have scored 21 goals in the Champions League this season. United have only scored 12.
Oh.
But they've had both had 45 shots on or attempts on goal each. No, attempts on target. And 57 corners each.
Oh, OK. But Schalke are just that much more effective at putting the ball in the net. And a lot of that's got to do with the fact they got Raul, perhaps?
Yeah. Difficult to see him not scoring over the course of the two games.
Well, Barry, speaking of seeing, is that a black eye you're currently sporting?
Yes. It's the last remaining. It's fading.
When did you get that?
Well, I'll give you three options because I'm sick of telling people, right? And you can guess, see if you can guess the right one. I either got it, A, having been punched in the face in a dispute over a pub pool table.
That's my pick.
B, having been punched in the face by a friend's five-year-old boy.
Again, in a fight over a pool table.
No, nothing to do with the pool table. Or C, I fell out of bed and cracked my head off the bedside table.
Right. John Ashton.
I want it to be the five-year-old boy.
Really?
C sounds by far the most realistic.
Right. This could be a quiz show, couldn't it? Can we make a panel game out of this? With me as the host.
We could.
Where did Barry get this bodily injury?
Would I have to have bruises every week?
Yeah. Anyway, tell us, Barry.
C. I fell out of bed and cracked my head off the bedside table. I wish it was something more glamorous.
Glad
it's
your
hard
head you cracked off on this occasion. Anyway. Yeah. I'll just move on then. I'm sorry to hear about
it. It wasn't a sexual misadventure, I isn't bad. I was in bed alone at the time.
Right. Okay.
Although that...
Yeah.
That doesn't rule it out.
I'm so sorry, listeners. Right, anyway, we're talking about Raul. Yeah.
Actually, James, there is a danger that Schalke may run out of gas in this year's Champions League. Do you have any running out of gas related anecdotes you'd like to share with our audience?
Yeah. Well, it just so happens that I mentioned to Barry earlier that my trip to the countryside yesterday was hampered by running out of petrol on the motorway briefly. Yeah, if you were on the M3 Sunday afternoon and you saw somebody in shorts and a bedraggled shirt sweating and puffing his way up the hard shoulder, with a can of gas in one hand and a wife shrieking at him from some distance behind. That was me.
If you take into account that Schalke are sponsored by Gazprom...
Oh, yeah.
Unlikely to run out of gas.
Yeah, absolutely. Or unlikely.
We were saying your nightmare scenario would have been for you to be stomping along in your bedraggled state for chappers to pull up in a chauffeur-driven limo and offer you a lift back to your car.
With Sid as the chauffeur. Nightmare. Mm. Anyway.
No, nightmare would be going through a sort of deliverance scenario.
Oh, right. Yeah. Well, it in the Felton area, that would be particularly unpleasant, wouldn't it? All right. I think we were talking about Raoul still. Raoul. He hasn't run out of gas, etc., blah, blah, blah.
He's been very good.
Yeah, good. All right, well, we'll move on then. Schalke warmed up for the visit. Is that all we're going to do about Schalke? Yeah? Okay, and United, by contrast, haven't looked that special. I mean, yeah, they won against Everton with that late goal, but Everton had some chances. They certainly did. And before that, what? There was a 0-0 against Newcastle. I know they usually, you know, get it together for the big games, United, but hey, I'm just saying. There you go. Schalke had a 1-0 defeat against Kaiserslautern this weekend. We're going to be talking more about what happened in the Bundesliga in a second or two, but right now that's enough for part one. What a part one that was, eh? Magnificent. Now, more German stuff, Bundesliga fans. Raphael, shocks abounded this weekend as Champions League Dortmund went down 1-0 at Borussia Mönchengladbach, who'd only won seven games all season.
It was a big shock because the Dortmund fans turned out, I think 30,000 of them invaded that stadium hoping that...
30,000?
Yeah, hoping to celebrate the championship, because there was a scenario with Leverkusen losing a bit earlier or drawing that Dortmund could have wrapped up the title. Of course, the opposite happened. Leverkusen won their game against Hoffenheim and Dortmund lost.
Did they go quietly or not?
What?
Was there any unrest when the 30,000, you know, disgruntled fans left?
No.
No problems at all. Okay, good. Anyway, that meant that second place Leverkusen closed the gaps to 5 points with three games to go with their 2-1 win over Hoffenheim. Bayern Munich, meantime, who just moved back into the Champions League places, move back out again. Is this going to continue for the next 3 weeks or who's going to... Are they going to get into the Champions League, Raphael?
Well, they've only got 1 point to make up. Hannover 1 point ahead of them, and Hannover have a fairly tricky program, whereas Bayern are playing Schalke next week, and there was a suggestion that Schalke, just as they did against Kaiserslautern, would probably not field their strongest 11. So, you know, they still got a good chance, but the problem is really that, you know, right now they're trying to sign all these players for next season, and with the Champions League hanging in the balance, it makes a big difference to what they can do and can't do when it comes to transfers. And the uncertainty in Munich is always very great once they're below number one position. And when they're fourth, it's a full-blown crisis, and it's going to continue until the end of the season because they're not going to be able to go clear even in the best scenario.
All right. Did we ask you before about the sausage train at St. Pauli or not?
I think you did. Yeah.
All right, and you weren't familiar with it.
Did you? No, I am familiar with it.
Oh, okay. What is the sausage? Because I saw pictures of it, and then somebody sent me a picture this week of a kind of customer's shack. It looks like a kind of a workman's shack, which is apparently their version of a VIP box.
Yeah, it's one of the versions of a VIP box. It looks like a shantytown on stilts.
Yeah.
Which one of the... local advertising companies who have an account with St. Pauli built for their... clients, as it were. But there is also a sausage train, which is a bit like the Yo Sushi principle.
Yeah. And but does it go all the way around the stadium or just in the customer's box?
You wouldn't like it to go all the way around the stadium with 20,000 people all
it's
nibbling
just in the
at
customer's
your sausage.
Box, is it? It's just at the customer's box, is it? It's just a train going around with sausages on it.
Yes.
You can take as many as you like.
Yes.
Wow, that's fantastic.
What's
the name of
this
advertising agency? You don't. That's box
it's
living.
It's part of the corporate
it's their
entertainment.
Version of the prawn sandwich.
Yeah, exactly.
Sounds great. So going to football in Germany sounds much better than going to football
especially
here.
Especially in that box. I don't know who this advertising agency are, but they know who we are.
This is a different box.
Oh. Which box is it that we need to get in touch
just
with?
Just a normal corporate.
All right, then. They're not going to be in the
there
box.
There is also a box, by the way.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of controversy about this. You might have read this in my German Bundesliga blog a few weeks ago. One of these corporate boxes has been hired by a strip bar, and they had girls dancing around the pole and undressing whenever St. Pauli scored. Now, this didn't go down well at all with the St. Pauli fans, contrary to what you might think, because
they're
very anti-sexist and anti-discrimination of women, etc. And so these girls were forced to cover up And now there's still a big push for this this strip bar to lose their lease, as it were, because they don't want that kind of people at their club.
Good for them.
So you pick out a sausage that could already have been well fondled by
what?
Any number of complete strangers or one of these strippers.
Right. Well, I don't think that's the same box, is it?
Only a fool would put the sausage train in the same box as the strippers.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking male strippers. Wouldn't that be the answer?
That's not what I'm thinking. It's not what I'm thinking.
Isn't it? Okay. Anyway, that's the Bundesliga. Moving along to Spain, Sidlow is on holiday. Leave him alone, all right? It's his last chance to get a bit of holiday for a while, yeah, with the missus.
How can he go on holiday?
Well, he's going to be back.
In the middle of this.
No, he'll be back. I'm sure he'll be back for that.
There aren't any big Spanish games coming up in the next few days. So.
Yeah.
Or else it's quite possible that he's written and said so much about Superclásicos that he's now rocking somewhere in a home for the bewildered with a straitjacket on.
Yeah. That's equally possible. Here's what he missed this weekend, if indeed he missed it. Messi becoming the first player to score 50 goals in a Spanish season as Barcelona beat Osasuna 2-0. Real Madrid saying 2-0, pa, as they beat third-place Valencia 6-3. That's the team in third place. The gap between first and third is now 25 points in the Liga.
Sorry, am I right in thinking as well that David Villa scored for Barcelona? So it's like his first goal in eight games.
Oh, was it? Okay.
So that could be like the Torres thing. I think it was a bit of a worry that now that every time David Villa sits down, he's going to
poo a goal.
Poo a goal as well.
Yeah. I tell you. Yeah. Okay. Valencia scoring two late goals in that. So it was actually 6-1. And this was there was a lot of talk about, wow, Real Madrid with their second string. But the second string featured Benzema, Kaká, who got two goals, actually. Welcome back, Kaká. And three from Higuain. Who has the advantage? It says here, ahead of the Champions League semi-final at the Bernabeu. Anyway, so there you go. They're both doing really well, those two teams. Formica Atomica posts in saying, I think Mourinho is a bloody lucky manager. He gets to play Barcelona now when they're knackered because their squad is too thin, as opposed to in February after their winter break. He got to play them last season when they had to travel by bus because of the volcanoes. He came to the English League when Man United and Arsenal were getting set to build new teams. Inter again, he arrived there after Calciopoli had wrecked the opposition and they were the richest club in Italy, etc., etc. It's a fair point, but you make your own luck in this game, I've always felt. And,
is that what you've always said?
Yeah. And remind me to tell you one day about my opinion of how many halves there are in football as well. Two. I think it's very much a game of two. No, that obviously didn't work out. Anyway, no, you can't argue with his record for Mika Atomica. Don't be ridiculous. The question is, has he now got the Indian side, the knockover Barcelona, do you think, ahead of this Champions League semi-final, or is the absence of, say, Ricardo Carvalho going to prove decisive?
I think it's difficult to say that Mourinho, or even suggest that Mourinho might have the wood over Barca, considering Barca slaughtered them in the league, like just totally embarrassed them, lost Copa del Rey, which is probably the one tournament that would be, not happy to lose, but, you know, we'll take the rest if we can. And you can have Copa del Rey. So I'd say Barcelona are very much in the box. Carvalho will be a big loss for Real Madrid. But again, Villa hopefully back in scoring form.
Hopefully for
my money fans would be on Barca.
Barca to go through, eh?
Yeah.
All right. Good. Okay, well, we'll be finding out on Wednesday night what happens. The Schalke-Man United game coming up before that on Tuesday. Barry, in the meantime, you watch the Old Firm game this weekend.
Yes, voluntarily, in my own leisure time when the sun was splitting the rocks outside. And disappointingly, it was the only Old Firm game I've seen this season. I think I've watched five.
That's a lot of
seven.
Old Firm games.
It is, yeah, and I'm not even that interested in Scottish football. So I think it's just because they're on Sunday lunchtime, tend to be on, so it's handy for me, my hectic schedule. But yesterday's was by far and away the poorest of the lot. Again, I just remain mystified as to how players as bad as Georges Samaras and Kyle Lafferty can steal a very, very good living, like, and live a millionaire lifestyle out of professional football when they're both so, so poor. Samaras could have won it for Celtic yesterday, but needless to say, missed a penalty. And
Lafferty
was just, he's just a joke.
Right.
I mean, but it's a drum I've banged before. I probably shouldn't be so hard on it. But I just think it's bizarre that players as poor as them
quite bizarre was Neil Lennon getting a complaint made to the police about Neil Lennon, recipient of explosive devices.
Well, it's not bizarre at all. It's monotonously predictable in the old firm tit-for-tat culture. Lennon was being barracked after the game. He went to applaud the Celtic fans. And then as he was going down the tunnel, he was being abused by all the Rangers fans. The game was in Ibrox. And he put his hands up to his ears in a very sectarian way. But
what, to suggest he couldn't hear them?
Yeah, just, you know, what are you saying? Or I right. can't hear you, whatever. So, needless to say, a few gobshites complained to the police, and the police have decided not to charge him. He probably shouldn't do it because he...
After the week he's had, though.
He knows by now what people are like up there. But he seems to be as bad as all of them. So,
well,
it's just... The humorlessness that surrounds the fixture is the main source of entertainment at this stage. But that leaves Celtic in the box seat to be the tallest pygmies in the village this year.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for a comparatively short part two, but I'm guessing that means we must be saving all our best bits for part three. Woof.
Do we have any bits left?
Yeah, yeah. You wait and see. Okay, Italy. Oh, looks all over there. Milan 8 points clear at the top of Serie A after Napoli lost for the second week in a row. This time it was against Palermo. You remember Palermo? They ditched Elia Rossi. They brought in Cesi Cosmi. And then they decided that didn't work about a month later. Then they brought in Delia Rossi again. And Delia Rossi is now, in his three games, beaten Roma, drawn with Milan 2-2 in the Italian Cup semi-finals at the San Siro, and now beaten Napoli. So convincing has his return been. The president Zamperini of Palermo said that he will definitely be the manager next season. He didn't say how many times, though.
But does that mean, is that brilliant chairmanship by Zamperini or really bad chairmanship?
Well, it takes a big man to recognise he's made a mistake, I suppose you might say, if you were being positive about this. But anyway, there you go. Palermo, Inter now goes second because Napoli lost. They had a man sent off, and it was Julio Cesar early on in the game against Lazio, but they still came back from a goal down. It was a brilliant free kick by Wesley Sneijder, absolutely top draw, and then a goal by Eto, and they could have had several more, and they beat Lazio 2-1. And all sorts of other things to mention. Parma are putting a good run together under their new manager, Franco Colombo, and they are now moving away from the relegation zone. They beat Udinese, who are still in the hunt for that last Champions League place. Lazio's loss means that Roma are still in the mix for that Champions League place. They're only 4 points behind. Juve definitely out of the European position mix. Sampdoria, you remember they got threatened, etc., ambushed by their own fans last week.
Is there any team you haven't mentioned yet out of the 20?
No, of them. But don't worry, I'll come on to them shortly. Anyway, it's all very exciting. Sampdoria finally won. But Rafael, Sampdoria, they used to be the nicest club in Italy, but it's all gone a bit horrible there. And they were getting attacked by their own fans, and they went to Rome to prepare. They basically fled to Rome to prepare for their game against Bari, which they won, putting Bari mathematically down. The first team relegated. Brescia looked like they'll go next. And then you've got seven teams: Lecce, Sampdoria, Catania, Cesena, Parma, Chievo, and Bologna, all in the mix. With 5 points between them, it's going to be probably Lecce or Sampdoria. I don't know. Anyway, in other Euro news, Reta Liberty says Jari Litmanen, who we mentioned last week, he just signed again for Hajduke or something, Helsinki. He's the only player to have played international football in four different decades. Fact. There you go, John. You like quizzes. That's
a good fact.
That's a good fact. Are you not doing a special quiz? Am I not right in thinking you are preparing something pretty special?
Especially
for the intro to our special Football Weekly Special Champions League final.
Yeah, as I've had previous quiz mastering experience.
Yep.
I've been selected, headhunted,
right,
to provide the entertainment on the evening.
Mm-hmm. Good, and there'll be a quiz.
You mean we're not going to be entertaining?
Right.
There'll be some entertainment, then a podcast.
Then a podcast, yeah. Sounds fair. And so you'll be doing a quiz then. That's the kind of question that could really, really, in fact, if you could include that, because I know the answer to that.
Well, yeah, well, I was told that you're very keen to take part in the quiz, Jimbo, because you think you know more than all the listeners and that you can win.
Boy, do I. Those losers haven't got a chance.
Who's going to be on your team?
I don't know.
Two synaptic sparking brains,
and a smythe. I don't think the lineup has been announced yet. But I think the manner in which
the Guardian disgraced themselves at the Up to Joe quiz,
they didn't disgrace themselves. They came third.
That's a disgrace, considering the personnel on their team.
Yeah, that's fair.
And the shenanigans afterwards.
Let's just hope that ESPN don't turn up to our special Champions League
final.
That's
true. I think actually the pod team should be a team. And any team of listeners who fails to beat the pod team's score should just be escorted from the building, really.
Right. The thing is, the question is, can we also, during the quiz, just say, stop, we need to Google this first, that we do on the pod?
Yeah.
Then I'm sure we'd be very good.
If we have Sean Ingle on the panel, it could be taking a very long time indeed. Anyway, okay, good. Thanks to Imark, who posts him with the facts on the Dutch Eredivisie and how things stand there at the top. It's very tight. Twente, 68 points. Ajax, 67. PSV, 65. And lots of interesting things to talk about in the Dutch league. Johan Cruyff, Ajax, all that sort of. We should get onto that, actually. We must dial up our Dutch correspondent in a future pod. Right now, though, hi, Barry.
Sir, can I just ask Raphael, how have Wolfsburg been doing since Steve McLaren left? Have they got better or worse? I just haven't been following.
Much, much worse. They are.
Didn't they just win their first game under Magath?
Yeah, just their first game. They're still fighting against relegation. Magath's come back. And he's taken them to a 4-1 win against Cologne, but they're not out of the woods yet.
Mm. All right. Raphael, just one thing actually on the Bundesliga. There was some confusion over how Manuel Neuer signed for Schalke when he was just 4 years old, but there's no legal issues.
Just in big letters.
crayon, yeah. Yeah, but so you sign up for a club even at four. Was he a real prodigy then, or is it
I don't know what he was like when he was four,
right.
But he started very early and quickly rose through the ranks.
What about Julian Draxler then? How old is he?
17.
All right, and he's in the team. And is it true that some teachers in that area have complained to the authorities on the basis that he shouldn't be allowed to play at night because it's past his bedtime?
Yes, because there are very, very severe restrictions on the employment of minors after 6 o'clock.
Right.
And Schalke, being a football club, never had worried about this before because they said, you know, it's not as if we're bussing in 15-year-olds to, you know, to serve beer in the middle of the night. This guy's playing here. But, there was this one teacher who said the authorities really need to look at this because this is exploitation. Only in Germany.
And what happened?
Nothing.
Oh, all right. So he's free to play anyway?
Yeah, I don't think the authorities will drag him off the pitch on Tuesday night.
Well, as long as he's done his prep first or something, that'll be the guidelines, I'm sure. Now, Championship, John, I mentioned you're on your way to the Palace, like so many people this week, of course, and it's Crystal Palace and their game against Leeds this evening. The fact that there's a full programme of Championship fixes rather defeats our avowed intention of doing a Championship roundup because the games simply haven't been played yet.
Although it has been a big weekend, so we can look back on
a big weekend.
Well, it all started on Thursday.
Wow.
When Norwich played Ipswich in the Old Farm game, Norwich winning 5-1 to go second, piling the pressure on the other sides up there, Cardiff and Reading. On Friday, Reading went to Leeds, having won 8 games on the bounce, and drew 0-0 at Elland Road, which put Leeds under pressure because early on in the day, Nottingham Forest had beaten Leicester 3-2.
They got a win.
Take sixth. Yeah, only their second win in 11 games, I think it was.
Wow.
So that meant ahead of Saturday, when it was all sort of playoff related, apart from the big game at the top, Cardiff QPR, which ended 2-2 down in South Wales.
Well, that is playoff related, though, because Cardiff...
Well, it means that Cardiff, stay in the playoffs rather than in the top two, and that QPR weren't promoted. They should be promoted today if they beat Hull.
Points deduction pending.
Well, of course, yeah, that's all slightly up in the air. It remains to be seen what the authorities do there. So basically, it has been a big weekend of football where nothing has really been sorted out yet. We're sort of still at the top. We've got a sort of 3 or 4 little divisions. So we've got QPR at the top, who are safe, essentially, although they're not officially promoted yet. Then a little mini-league for the second automatic promotion spot between Cardiff, Norwich and fourth-place Reading. And Swansea are in fifth, and they're essentially on their own, not going to lose their playoff place despite not being in particularly good form. And then the battle for sixth, that last playoff spot, is between Forest, Leeds, Burnley, who aren't far away, Hull, I think, are still clinging on. Millwall are right in the mix as well.
All right, and then down at the bottom, that's good. That's where you're going to see the Palace game, presumably, is it?
Yeah, well, Palace are just outside the bottom three, and they can essentially, if they win today, it basically more or less ends things for the bottom three, Sheffield United, Preston and Scunthorpe. Palace had that a 0-0 draw on Friday in a big game with Doncaster, who are just above Palace.
Right.
And that kept, I mean, a win for either side would have been a disaster for the bottom three, but a 0-0 draw was giving them a little bit of hope.
Mm. Ricardo Ricciardo posts in saying, question for John Ashdown on Monday. A majority of Cardiff fans believe Dave Jones is woefully underachieving, given the players at his disposal. Have they got a point, John, or do they need a reality check?
I don't think they've spent enough for their expectations to be they're going to run away with the division.
Right, okay.
Because QPR have been financially expansive as well.
Yeah, they are.
But Dave Jones, he's a funny character. He's very spiky with the local press. They really don't seem to get on, and he's quite a bristly character when you go down there. So he's sort of, I think he sometimes struggles to sort of bond with the
right
with the fans.
Weird, actually. I interviewed Dave Jones once for our Small Talk feature, mm-hmm. which was a blend of questions pertaining to those horrible allegations, unfounded allegations against him, and you know his favourite kind of biscuit. So I wasn't really relishing it, but he was plugging a book in which he'd spoken about, you know, the effect the allegations of child abuse had on his life and marriage and career and all that. And so yeah, I was very nervous about it, and I found him to be, knowing that, you know, he's such a spiky character with the press, but he was absolute gent, great man to talk to.
Oh, there you go.
I want to ask John as well. Are you resigned to Sheffield United's fate?
Yeah, absolutely. I did. I was at Bramall Lane on Saturday for the we couldn't actually have gone down, but it was a 3-2 win against Bristol City in the rain, and then the sunshine, and then the rain again, and then the sunshine, and we got a late winner. But I don't think it really makes any difference in the grand scheme of things. I was sat in the press, such is the state of the club at the moment. I was sat in the press box, and a huge leak sprung about 3 feet away from me. Mm. Water cascading, I had to move.
What will be the financial implications of Sheffield United going down?
Well, there's no. I mean, they haven't got any money at the moment anyway. It's more the playing squad and the fact that a few of the sort of decent players will probably leave because teams are prepared to buy them. There is a bright spot on the horizon because the youth team, the academy side, are the team taking on Man United in the FA Youth Cup final.
Oh.
And a couple of the players from that under-18 side made their home debuts on Saturday.
Excellent. All right. Now, well, returning to the Premier League to finish off today, one or two little things we haven't talked about. First off, Spurs were trying to get into the top four. Looks unlikely now. Man City just a point ahead of them with a game in hand. They have to travel. They face Man City at Eastlands. Is that right, later?
Sorry,
on?
Yeah.
Yeah. Meantime, Liverpool are just behind them. And coming off that enormous 5-0 win, their biggest win in a couple of years. And you'd have to worry. You'd be worrying if you were Harry Redknapp about Kenny's men coming up behind you.
Well, considering the amount of stick at different points of the season that the managers of the teams of Arsenal and Chelsea and Manchester City have taken over the course of the season, Redknapp has got away incredibly scot-free. Mm. For if they finish outside the top four, it'll be a failure for him.
Yeah.
And it puts him under huge pressure next season.
And if they finish outside the top five, they won't even be in the Europa League.
Absolutely. And, you know, you consider the season of stability that Tottenham have had. It's been a, obviously they've had the distraction and the extra games of the Champions League. But, the boat hasn't been rocked at all. And you compare that with the start that Liverpool had when they're in disarray. To finish below Liverpool, which is possible, would be a terrible result, really.
I don't know what Redknapp has to do to get stick. He's got so many media chums among the sort of British press pack that he can't do wrong. He never gets criticised for anything. You know, he seems an affable enough bloke, but if he was French and possibly less chummy with in press conferences, I'd imagine he'd be shipping no end of stick.
Yeah, but I don't know. I think this, you have to be realistic about Spurs and their ability. I mean,
they did go on a glorious Champions League run as well.
No, but they're not. They can't expect to come forth with City's money, with Liverpool's tradition and heritage, and other teams are getting a little bit stronger as well. You know, I think for them to finish fourth would have been a fantastic achievement, just as it was last year. I don't think if they finish fifth or sixth, you could say they're having a bad season and it's a season of failure. I just think the margins of error are too small, and also don't forget they couldn't just go out there and say, okay, we're in the Champions League, so we have to now buy 6-7 more players to make sure that we can fight on both fronts. You'll notice from Italy, I know it from Germany, you see it every year that teams that come fresh into the Champions League, then they can't sustain that challenge domestically because just they can't deal with that pressure on both fronts. And I think they've done as well as they could have done, really.
Still, it's a bit worrying that in the last 10 games in all competitions, their only victory was a 3-2 against Stoke.
And look at the points they've dropped against some terrible, terrible teams. They've dropped...
lost to Blackpool, drawn with Wolves, West Ham, Wigan, West Brom and Arsenal, most worryingly all.
Yeah, some of the worst teams in the Premier League there, and Blackpool. But I don't think they have a divine right to expect to finish fourth, but I just think they should have done it quite comfortably this season. And considering the number of points, the huge number of points they've dropped against some awful teams in recent months.
How can they do it comfortably when they're up against a team who's spent another $100 million or so in this transfer window?
But they haven't been outspent by Liverpool, have they?
No, I'm talking about Manchester City.
I'm just thinking of the prospect of them finishing below Liverpool. Sorry, John.
Yeah, I mean, the 14 players they used on Saturday cost over $100 million combined. So it's not a team that they've built on a shoestring.
Although that's not what Harry would have you believe. He likes to play the poor church mouse, you know.
Well, yeah, and he said again after the game that, you know, we can qualify again, but we'll need to spend more money sort of thing. And you think, well, you have spent a fair bit, and they've got, you know, they had plenty of expensive players on the bench and out on loan. I don't think it's unreasonable. He seems to think that it's unreasonable that people expect them to be in the top four. I don't think, having spent that much, it's unreasonable to expect that.
All right. Liverpool, anyway, doing absolutely terrifically in their last 12 games. Only Man United and Chelsea have performed better. Very impressive. There you go. Looks like it's going to be an interesting finale there, and particularly at the bottom, of course, which is where we'll finish. You mentioned Blackpool there. They got a point against Newcastle.
Big point for them.
Was it a big point, or was it two big points dropped?
No, well, they should have won, and Ian Holloway had some very thinly veiled criticism about the referee afterwards, about decisions that didn't go the way that should have gone their way, and they, even without those decisions, they missed a lot of chances and should have won the game comfortably. But I think the other results made a big point for them.
Of the bottom half, in fact, Barry, only Sunderland won.
I know, isn't it remarkable?
Yeah.
Sunderland won a match.
Yeah, excellent stuff.
Didn't they end the game without a striker on the pitch in a sort of, you know, sort of formation that would have Jonathan Wilson in raptures? A strikerless Sunderland.
Yes. Yeah, quite a thought, isn't it? There you go. Anyway, so there were three W's in the bottom three again with the three B's above them. And that pretty much brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly. On Thursday, we'll be back with all the reaction to the Champions League semi-finals, and probably we'll get a bit of Championship news, shall we? You know, there'll be some more games played by then, and all that kind of thing. And looking forward to the weekend's games. For now, though, it is many thanks, Barry Glendinning, John Ashdown, and Raphael Honigstein, and producer Ben. A big shout out to Noah Seamus, who's the big 0-1 today, and have a super week, listeners. Until we speak to you next, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.